from PRX.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, friends beyond the binary, it's time for the podcaster. It doesn't pop his peas. He coats his peas in pillows and then puffs them up pleasantly. Something else, because you know why? Because sometimes I run out of stuff to say, but I still keep going anyway. And rarely do I rhyme. And I cannot keep any sort of time. Because it's time for sleep. The time is, I should have snuck that in there. It's time for Sleep With Me, the podcast that puts you to sleep. Hey, everybody, this is Scoots, and I actually need you to listen to this message. If you're a regular listener, Sleep With Me. If you're new, don't worry about it. But we've got some big decisions with the show on the horizon, so I really, really need your help. If you are a regular listener to Sleep With Me, and it has changed how you sleep, you rely on the show, you like the show, it does something for you, or you feel good about the podcast, you like it, or you count on it, I really got to ask you to take action. So if Sleep With Me means something to you, or you like it, if you can afford to support the show directly, or you're willing to consider giving up one takeout lunch a month to support Sleep With Me, try out a trial of Sleep With Me Plus and test out Sleep With Me Plus over the 7-day trial and just see what you think. But I think you'll find you'll be blown away, because there's so many different ways to listen to Sleep With Me and stuff like that. So if you think you can afford to support the show, please do that at Sleep With Me Plus, sleepwithmepodcast.com/plus. And if it doesn't make a difference to you, like it's like I can move on to something else if you stop making the show, or you decide to put out way, way less episodes, or you change what you're doing, I totally am fine with that. That's fine. But if Sleep With Me really does make a difference for you, I mean, I love making the show. I don't like being direct, because I usually get way more not nice emails when I'm direct about stuff. But I don't want to put out a message like 3 months from now and be like, you know what, we're changing things up and we've made some hard decisions. I want you to be a part of this decision-making process, because it's really like the other time Sleep With Me's been in this place. It's just taken being direct and saying, hey, if you care about the show, I need you to think about doing something about it. So think about it. It'll be cool. Like I trust that there's enough of you out there that get so much out of the show, because I've heard from you before. So yeah, check out sleepwithmepodcast.com/plus, or take one of those other actions. And what do you say we get on with the show? Tonight's episode of Sleep With Me is made possible by the hard work of Carl W., Chris Wilson Posterson, who edited this episode and did the theme music, Scotty, Jennifer, and Kenny, honor artwork, Jonathan Mann. You could commission a song from Jonathan Mann at song.jonathanmann.net. He does our lullabies. I'm at Dear Scooter on Twitter. That's how you find me. Listeners have their own Facebook group. I want to thank the moderators, Stacy, Laura, Sarah, Keith, Julie, and Jennifer. And that's it. Let's keep the show going. Hey, are you up all night tossing, turning, mind racing, trouble getting to sleep, trouble staying asleep? Well, welcome. This is Sleep With Me, the podcast that puts you to sleep. We do with a bedtime story. All you need to do is get in bed, turn out the lights, and press play. I'm going to do the rest. What I'm going to attempt to do is create a safe place where you can set aside whatever's keeping you awake, whether it's thoughts, feelings, physical sensations, you know, your body's doing something, your emotions are churning. Maybe somebody started doing laundry at like 10:30, and you say, "Dude, what are you doing that for?" Or maybe you said, "Why didn't I start doing laundry?" It could be laundry related, may not be. More than likely, it's not. That just could be me. You see, did I leave the laundry in there? Or what about the one where it's like you check the laundry at 6, somebody's got their dried or wet laundry. You say, "Okay, check it at 7." Okay, they should have been home. They started the laundry when they left for work. 8, nope. 9, you say, okay, now it's cut. Is 9 p.m. starting laundry if you live in an apartment building cutoff time to start it? That was a trick question. Definitely. It should be finished. I don't know. Finished by 10. Anyway, I'm off tangent already. What was I going to say? Well, it's a podcast to take your mind off stuff. I create a safe place where you could set aside whatever's keeping you awake. Any of that stuff, like I said. And the way I'm going to do it is I'm going to send my voice across the deep, dark night. I'm going to use a lulling, soothing, creaky, dulcet tones, pointless meanders. Obviously, I'm going to get distracted and talk about stuff and like rambling. I think that's what that's called. And I don't know if I do any soliloquies. I'll have to look that up. That's a tough word to say, but it's like a soliloquy. When you can say it, it's not bad. I don't know where this is coming from, but, you know, sometimes when I say a word, it puts an image in my mind. Like, I would like to be lying in a canoe. That's what soliloquy makes me think of. And maybe it'd be nice if I could play the banjo. I would be playing the banjo lying down in a canoe in a river or a bog or a swamp, a river, you know, a river that's barely moving. And I'd be playing a song. I don't know if it'd be a soliloquy or a song about soliloquy or about the beauty of soliloquy. That's what it would be. Also, that's pending. That's another possible book that may never come out one day on Gingerbread Press. What did I say? The Beauty of Soliloquy? And maybe one with Solitude and Soliloquy. The Beauty of Soliloquy Companion. There you go. Two for one there. Oh, if you're new, though, sorry about that. I'm here to take your mind off stuff, to keep you company here in the night. I go off topic. I'm here to be your boyfriend. And let me see if I can explain structurally. Here's what to expect. The show starts with about 4 minutes of business. That's how we keep over 650 plus archived episodes free. So thank you for checking that out, the sponsors and all that stuff, for supporting the show. If you're new, check the show and see if you like it first. So thank you for listening to that. Then we have an intro, which we started. Intros are usually around 12 to 14 to 15 to 11 to 16 minutes or so. And it's a show within a show where I talk about, sometimes I get stuff pops in my brain. Soliloquies, canoes. How about lollipops? I wonder if lollipops and soliloquies are related. They do, I don't know, but so the intro is where I kind of, ideally, the intro is in a perfect world. The intro would be about 4 minutes if it wasn't a sleep podcast. It'd be a bit like the teaser where I say, this is it, the podcast to put you to sleep. And then I would like count down, like if it was a podcast that didn't work, but sold for $25 an episode, it would say, like I say, this is it, the podcast to put you to sleep, 10. Now, and then I'd snap my fingers. I'd say, you know, you're in a canoe, you're gently rocking. A banjo plays in the distance. Yet a banjo is in your hand. A lollipop is in your mouth, and a soliloquy is on the tips of your lips. You're in perfect solitude. And as I count down from 10, you'll be asleep. Please send your payments. You know, then they'd say, hey, by the way, if you want to finish this episode, send $29.95 to Battle Creek, Michigan, and all that stuff. But this podcast is a little bit different. It has that stuff because, I don't know, it has all that extra stuff. The intro is where I try to explain what the podcast is because it's not a guru-based podcast. It's not a quick fix or an instant fix. It's a friend. A friendly voice here to keep you company and to bring a little bit of silliness and levity to bedtime and to say, hey, well, I could listen to this or whatever, you know, say, well, let me listen to Scoots. He's not really making a whole lot of sense, but he kind of is. Soliloquy is, it's got that lull in the middle there, and Scoots's tones are, he says they're lulling and soothing and creak dulcet tones. And what could have more pointless meanders than a river when you're lying in a canoe and you know it's like an old river, so you say, well, I'm just going to kick back in the canoe and look at the sky and listen and hold this banjo and enjoy my lollipop. That's the intro, is where I try to explain what the podcast is. Use a metaphor or something barely resembling a metaphor. In this case, the solitude of soliloquies and banjo playing while having a lollipop. And maybe that'd be another kind of form. Maybe that could be a good way to sing with a banjo, because you have something in your mouth, your voice would sound a little different. Maybe start with a cover of Ain't No Hole in the Washtub and see where it goes from. You know, Emmett Otter. Who's your favorite banjo player? Yeah, Emmett Otter. Oh, well, did Emmett Otter play the banjo, or was that somebody else? Was that his friend with the mustache? Yeah, the beaver, whatever it was. Okay, moving on. So that's the intro. Then there's a story. Tonight's our episodic modular with just a little spice of cereal dashed on top of it. And it's a story, bedtime story to keep you company. Pretty dense, but rich with dreamlike imagery. That's what it says on the tin, tonight's tin. So the story will be there about 45, 50 minutes, and then we'll have some thank yous at the end. Between the intro and the story is like another sponsor that helps keep the show going. And that's about it for the structure of the show. Oh, how the show works. I have no idea. You know, I'm just floating in a canoe in my own mind. But structurally, so, but here's the thing. You don't need to listen to me. Just imagine. And actually, that would be an ideal moment if you were kicked back in a canoe and you had a lollipop or you were really feeling good, like the perfect temperature. You could, there's so many things to listen to. You could be listening to the sounds of the water. Maybe there's birds. Maybe there's insects. Maybe you're playing the banjo, or maybe someone else in the distance is playing the banjo. Or maybe it's an echo of your banjo. I don't know. Maybe the banjo, and you say, well, is someone really playing the banjo, or am I imagining it? And then maybe you're looking at the clouds in the sky. What was my point? You don't need to listen to this podcast. You could just kick back and kind of listen, just like our banjo, a soliloquist. Is that someone that does soliloquies, a soliloquist? I don't think I've ever pronounced words. I don't know what happened. Maybe what was the last thing I had? A lifesaver. I've never felt, I don't know, my tongue's never, maybe I don't know if I've been doing tongue exercises, but it feels like that. Soliloquist. It's soliloquist for 400, Alec. That's not a topic. Okay. So you don't need to listen to me, obviously. I mean, come on, my favorite banjo player at this moment is Emmett Otter. And you might say, what the heck is Emmett Otter? And I would say, well, you have, in this winter, you'll find something wonderful to discover. So you don't need to listen to me. You're also under no pressure to fall asleep. I'll be here for about an hour to keep you company. And you can fall asleep and drift off at any time. I want to give you plenty of space and plenty of companionship, because for me, I couldn't fall asleep, and I would listen to Dr. Demento, and knowing that was there for me to keep me company for a few hours, it just loosened something inside me and gave me room to breathe and relax despite the tossing and turning. So you could drift off at any time, or if you can't sleep, I'll be here. I'll be here for an hour, or you could start looping the episodes or, making a playlist. And I think that's it. I've been there even last night. This week, I don't know what's been going on with me, but, I've been tossing and turning, temperature unregulating. My temperature regulation went off. I had had it down. I think maybe the temperature outside changed. It was like so, for the Bay Area where I live, cold, which is not cold at all for most of you. But we don't use our heat as much. So I had I had my sheet. Then I had my, comforter with my nice duvet cover on there. Then I had my blanket on top of my, I have a blanket, not a blankie, this is a blanket. And then I had a weighted blanket that I've been testing out. So I had all those layers, and it was, and then I have a fan blasting, even though it's cold. I say, okay, let's keep it colder. And that was like 2 weeks, maybe that was last week or 2 weeks ago. And it made the perfect temperature where I needed all those layers to stay warm, but I wasn't too warm. And this week, no dice. Like last night, I was trying to sleep. I couldn't, you know, I couldn't find the right combo. And what's my point? Like, my point is that whatever's keeping you awake, I really, truly believe you deserve a good night's sleep. I want you to be able to go out there and at least cope with the world. But I want more for you. I'd like you to flourish. I'd like you to have, what is it, amor fati or whatever. You know, to be able to embrace life out there. And, you know, spread the love around however you do it. And this is how I do it is to say, well, I know what it's like. I might not know exactly what you're going through, but I feel for you truly. And this is my way of helping. Now, it doesn't work for everybody. For a small percentage of listeners that don't listen after the first listen, you know, it doesn't work for them. That's cool. But most regular listeners say, give it two or three tries, see what happens, because all I want to do is help. I appreciate you checking the show out and listening, and I work very hard because I yearn and I strive to help you fall asleep. All right, let's get this message of how we keep the show going, and then let's get on with the show. Sleep With Me is brought to you by Progressive, where customers who save by switching their home and car save nearly $800 on average. Quote at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary. Support for Sleep With Me comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting your time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switch to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/with me. That's odoo.com/with me. Odoo, modern management made simple. All right, welcome to our serial episodic modular story. But it doesn't have a title. It doesn't even have, it no longer even has a working title, but the story works at putting you to sleep. It's about a young woman, a young child, and her journeys through both imagination and a theme park. And to transition you to the story, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the history of It's a Small World from Wikipedia. A water-based dark ride located in the Fantasyland area of Walt Disney, some Walt Disney parks in Disneyland, Magic Kingdom, Tokyo Disneyland, Disneyland Paris, and Hong Kong Disneyland. It has over 300 audio animatronic children in traditional costumes from cultures around the world, frolicking in a spirit of international unity and singing the title song, which was a theme of which has a theme of global peace. It's the most performed song of all time, according to Time magazine. And just a little bit about the history. It was fabricated in Burbank at the Disney Studios as Children of the World. Created by WED Enterprises and shipped to the 1964 New York World's Fair at the UNICEF Pavilion. Wow, when was the last World's Fair that I'd like to go to a World's Fair? It was sponsored by a soda company, and it was that was featured at the entrance as a kinetic sculpture. The Tower of the Four Winds was 120-foot perpetually spinning mobile, created by Raleigh Crump, a WED designer. And it was added to four attractions. Does this have anything to do with the ride? I don't think it does. It was added to four attractions already under development, which were used by Disney to sponsor, fund, and test concepts and ride systems that would be moved, rebuilt at Disneyland in 1966. Yeah, that's one shrewd dude, that Walter Elias. It took the sponsor a while to agree on what kind of traction they wanted, and Joan Crawford got involved and said, hey, what about Walt Disney designing you an attraction? But there was a short lead time. And so according to Wikipedia, she insisted the board of directors take his proposal. And he was already designing attractions for the state of Illinois, Ford, GM, and Kodak, other sponsors. They only had 11 months to create and build the pavilion. Mary Blair, a wonderful artist, was responsible for the whimsical design and color styling. She had been art director on the beautiful Cinderella, Alice in Wonderland, Peter Pan. And like many Disneyland attractions, scenes and characters were designed by Mark Davis. Alice Davis designed the costumes. Raleigh Crump designed the toys and other supplemental figures. Blaine Gibson did the dolls. Walt helped Blaine and Greg Marinello do the faces. And each doll's face is completely identical in shape. Aero Development was involved in the design of the passenger boats and the propulsion system. They got two patents out of it, and, you know, that helped out in making Disneyland. As far as the 1964 World's Fair goes, that was the first incarnation of the ride, and it almost didn't happen, as we said. Disney was already busy with a bunch of other attractions, but they had been working on a dancing doll design, which would become the foundation for audio animatronics like Abe Lincoln, and they kind of like using robotics and stuff like that. They had a Circle Vision movie they were working on, and they said, hey, we want to do a tribute to UNICEF, and Disney seemed to be the showman to give the package they wanted. He's terrific. He's got his hands in more bowls than anyone I've ever seen, but he accomplishes what he sets out to do. That was J.G. Mullally, the World's Fair Program Director. And according to April 22nd, 1964, the opening day, this quote is from the guidebook to the New York State Fair, New York's World's Fair. A salute to the children of the world, designed by Walt Disney, presents animated figures frolicking in miniature settings of many lands. Visitors are carried past the scenes in small boats. They also, in an adjoining building, had other exhibits from UNICEF. Above the pavilion rises a 120-foot tower of the Four Winds, a fanciful recreation of colored shapes that dance and twist in the breeze. The attraction was incredibly successful. 10 million 60 cent and 95-cent tickets for children and adults were sold in 2.5 seasons, and the proceeds were donated to UNICEF. While other attractions had really long lines, there was always a seat available on Small World because it had a higher rider per hour capacity, which was a valuable innovation and incorporated in directly into future attractions like Pirates. So that's a little bit about It's a Small World, as you gently ride a boat and you drift along in an artificial canal. So comforting, though. Yes, it was a pleasure to meet you. And I didn't have my chance to introduce myself, my world of toys. You know, once upon a time before you came, I was a celebration of play around the world. And of all the advancements in toy technology and all the joy that advancements in toy technology brought to the children of the world. And also, in reality, my ride was capturing the joy of the toys. That was what the song the toys sang. Was that the joy the children brought to the toys? Though my attraction hasn't sung in ages. Maybe it'll never sing again. But that was the essential message, that it was being played with. And again, they would make a movie about this in another way. But it was that the toys are happy when they're played with, and the children are happy when they're playing with the toys. Another thing you didn't get to see was all the sparkling. There were sparkles in almost every costume, in every toy, in every surface, sparkles. So I really sparkled once upon a time. And there was a lot of motion. I think they called it kinetic motion, clocks and moving and flying and dancing and singing and toys, just tops of spinning. But there's just no more motion, as you saw. I wish you could have seen it. Maybe you would have treated me differently than you did. Because now I have a different kind of motion, thanks to you. And yeah, I had my critics. There was lots of critics of my attraction. But they really couldn't find their way around that catchy tune. You know, they would say that I was just an advertisement ride to tell children to play with toys. But the founder was very intelligent. The ride was thick with nostalgia for almost anyone over the age of 10. They would remember the first toy they played with, and they would even see themselves in some of the characters or relate to the characters playing with their toys, and they would feel good about the toys, the joy of the toys being played with. And yes, there were those that constantly complained of the infectiousness of my song. And they would say it was over syrupy and over sugary. And if the ride got stuck, they would talk about its mindlessness. And even some of the workers would wear hidden earplugs so they wouldn't run around singing the song for the rest of their lives. But for most people, the song just stuck in their head, a pleasant little tune about the world of toys and going to Toy Town, and about PlayCorp, the sponsor of my attraction. There were even those over the years that called my attraction propaganda and said, well, PlayCorp also makes all of these other things as part of the MI complex. And the toys are a distraction. But really, the only, I don't even remember the song now. It's been so long. They said it was so infectious, but now I can't even remember it. I do remember that they said, when the world's a village, all of the joy is in toys, and the toys are overjoyed with the global village or something like that. But you arrived under my former current conditions. When you arrived, that was my current, I had current conditions. Now I have another set of current conditions. And neither was the same as when I was at the World's Fair, or when I was built here. Originally, it was a soda corp that, and when the soda corp was purchased by Play Corp, they sponsored Toy Town. Here at the park. And if you were to separate my attraction, it would have been in three ways, which I think is where things started for you. There was the loading area and the beginning of the ride. And it was funny because the beginning of the ride welcomed the children and their guests to the world of toys and a trip to Toy Town. Next stop, Toy Town. And there's even the Toy Town Express running alongside the boats that the passengers would board in. Big, slow-moving boats. But the message was that the children could visit anytime. They told you that at the beginning and the end. anytime you wanted to come to the world of toys, you just needed to close your eyes and pick up your toy and start to play. But when you first arrived to my section, that wasn't what, you know, it had children, children boarding the Toy Town Express. Then it moved on to the idea that children just closing their eyes and boarding the, you know, that you could use your imagination to get to Toy Town. And the children, you know, they had started to sing at the beginning of my attraction and warming up to the song about the world of toys, joy and toys for the world, or whatever the song was. I don't remember it, like I said. But and the outside, of that was all outside. And then it went through doors, but those doors had been sealed long ago. So when you first got to the loading area, you didn't see any children, really any toys, because the children were, you just saw these rusted former exos, I guess, of the metal superstructures from the Tronics, which were also rusted. So they made strange, they looked like otherworldly beings almost, or a bit like the steam workers from Curly Sue. And most of the environment, the rolling hills and the tunnel that led into Toy Town, all that had kind of melted and turned gray and black, and it looked desolate a bit. And I think you kind of thought that the beings were bringing the desolation, and you didn't like it. Who would like it? It looked... it wasn't no way to enter an attraction with rusted kind of stick figures that didn't even move anymore. And you tried to get the doors open so you could get into the main attraction. And you could kind of see through the little window. And it looked like a utopia compared to the outside. But it was sealed pretty tight. Because they closed this ride earlier than the rest because it was considered a piece of history, at the time a working piece of history, a landmark, and it needed to be protected for historical purposes. And again, there was debates, and I guess the outside of the ride was added on in like the 80s or the 70s, so they said it wasn't the same. It didn't have the historical preservation needs as the inside of the ride did. The inside of the ride was worked on by the founder, they would say in a breathless voice. And I, you know, as the attraction, if I had had a vote, I would have said, preserve all of me. Holy mackerel. But you tried to get in and you couldn't. So then you headed back and you went in through the back. And the end of the ride was also outside or partially covered. The unloading area. And that was a moment when the ride, me, the attraction, and the children of the world, we were encouraging them to go out into the world of toys. Bring Toy Town home. Hint, hint, guests. Bring a piece of Toy Town home. Or, if your guests are cheap, we didn't say this, bring the spirit of Toy Town home. Spend some time in the world of toys every day. Because you visited, and now you've seen the power of play and the joy of toys. You know, and then we'd say to the guests, empower your children, empower their imagination. This was all the song. Your children were singing it. We also had light-up signs. You say, who doesn't want to empower a child with play? Who doesn't want to evoke the spirit of joy? I don't even know if that's really a saying. I've been contemplating that over the years. And maybe your guests would want to experience the joy of toys, too. Thank you for visiting Toy Town. But this was not the close of the ride that you saw, not the ending you experienced. Again, it was more rusty exos, stick figures, I guess, stick robots, and they seem to all have their hands up. Even in their deteriorated state, they seem to be celebrating something, some sort of victory, it seemed, that they were victorious over the guests, the parents, and the grandparents. They say, hey, let's get some toys. Let's spend some toys. You know, the exits end in a gift shop. Take some toys with you. And it was interesting how my boarding area was outside, but it went inside to a toy shop that was also had historical elements. So that was preserved and locked up tight. And you looked in there, but it didn't quite capture your attention because you had looked in enough gift shops already in your time here at the park. So you looked at it backwards again through another set of sealed doors at the ride, at the inside of my attraction, and then you were determined to get inside. The colors were so much brighter than the worn, deteriorated state on the outside. And you sit to it for a while. You tried finding other ways in, but they had really sealed up the exit so well. And like some of the other attractions, really with solar solar power panels, you know, created a venting and a dehumidification system. Well, you would see when you got inside. And you worked on the doors towards to the entrance of the ride at first. And then it all hit you, the canal and the few boats that were sitting in the bottom of the canal. And it had been a while you'd been at the park, so you had restored some of the water that was stored up on the hills and the water that was gathered from the rain kept up high. You know, that was to be used only in situations when they needed it and to increase water pressure for the guests. But after it had been rainy for a while, all of those were filled, and there was even a couple reservoirs inside the hills that you couldn't see. So you, it was, you know, brownish water, like a bit of a creek, but you started to fill the canal, and you let the water pressure help you against the doors. And I said, how did she learn that? How did she know that the strength of the water, the weight of the water? And of course, it worked with you doing some, wedging and hammering and that between the weight of the water, because the doors were watertight, but they weren't water weight tight. They were to keep rain out. So eventually, the doors broke, and then you filled the canal, and you didn't bother with the exit doors. You just tied a rope to them so you could pull yourself through on a boat because the propulsion, you know, it was a little, you said, why bother with that? One of these boats were empty. It's pretty easy to move. And then there was only four boats in there. So to get to the end, you had to jump boat to boat. But what you saw inside, it was a bit dusty. It wasn't, you know, they said, because my attraction was already much older than a lot of the newer ones. It was still gloomy inside. And the solar power was only to light the attraction lights. It was two separate electrical systems. It was to light the work lights, which weren't exactly flattering for all the parts of my attraction. My sound system was no longer operational. And the motions weren't operating. I said, how are you preserving history? Now I'm just a collection of scenes. But you looked through the cartoon versions of the children, only a few feet high and round heads, children of the world, in the world of toys, and how the ride started out with the historical, you know, imaginary historical history of toys from ancient times. I don't think it was based on, I think that was another criticism they said, Neanderthal children didn't play with sticks and rocks. And I said, let me see your proof. I mean, that's what I would have said if I could defend myself. And I said, well, maybe I have some resentment towards the founder. But am I a ride of fiction or a ride of imagination? You're telling me that Neanderthal children didn't have an imagination? But I guess none of it mattered because you were immersed at first. And then there was Woodville. Next stop, Woodville, a big room full of wooden toys, as if there was only one era of wooden toys. But there was a peak, I guess you'd call it peak wooden toys in Woodville. You know, wooden ducks on string and wooden boats and blocks glued together, which you tried to break them apart, but that glue was stronger than the wood. And also it was a plastic composite, not wood. It looked like wood. Plenty of other wooden toys and building things and things to play with, even wooden bowling set, again, glued, though. And since none of the motion worked, it was all kind of dull. You know, I think the duck was the only thing you got working because it would waddle its little feet. And, oh, there was a propeller you could spin in one of the wooden planes. And next was Tin Town, full of tin toys. And I said, it was at only one era. Was that before? But, but you went in and it was a smaller room. I guess the wood toys had a grander history than Tin Town. Within Toy Town was Tin Town. But you know, the tin toys, I think you avoided them for the most part because they did seem like, you said, well, you could get a scratch on here. And even though the rooms were sealed, they did use some real tin. And even though it had very glossy paint, some of the paint had deteriorated and there was some rust on those tin toys. But they still looked fun, those tin toys. Then it was off to Doll Island, which was actually a collection in a giant room of interconnected islands. I don't know why I'm criticizing myself to say Doll Archipelago, but I think I've read so many articles about me. But Doll Island was a place where dolls lived in Toy Town, in the world of toys, waiting for you to come. And there was usually children dancing and dolls dancing. But because there was no motion, again, it just looked like, what are these children doing? Just holding a doll. And, you know, you did have some, you know, Serena the Swan was someone you still carried with you. And we'll talk about your other play. So this did catch your curiosity. But this was the first room where you started to notice the eyes of the children and the eyes of the toys. And you looked at them questioning. And then you headed to Pretend Place. It was supposed to be based on dress up and kitchens and, cool in it. You know, different pretending you were already working adults. So that was, I don't know if that was as easy to communicate, as it just looked like a bunch of small scenes, in a small city. But it was very, when the lights were the right way, it was visually striking in the glitter. Again, you say, what cities have glitter everywhere? Well, Play Place does, Pretend Place, and that segued right through a subway tunnel, you know, that was giant for the boats to go through, into Action City, which had more action-based toys, or you could say more dolls that boys may have played with, but anyone could play with them. And that was all about the action of comic books and those kind of things, and movies and TV shows and heroism. Bought and sold, especially, and then of course, Play Corp they said, well, we have to show the toys we make, Army Ben and things, that's where some action is. And those were popular toys to play with. So there was children playing with all those toys. And you said you just looked at it like more dolls with more, you know, the thing was there was real toys in there and bigger toys. And the plastic held up well. So then you could see, well, these are more movable. These have articulating elbows and knees and in some cases ankles and forearms and hands. So you found that interesting. Then you headed into the forest, to furry fuzzy friend forest, where everywhere, and you saw Serena the Swan there, an adult version of her, not the swaddling version you carried along at your side. And that one didn't fare as well either. Now, these were supposed to be plush figures, but they were stuffed and they had internal makeup of metal, so they weren't as soft as the Serena the Swan you were used to. They were kind of hard, and they looked like they were soft and furry and fuzzy, because they were supposed to be evocative of those things, and the children played with them. But because everything was static, you say, well, why are you standing next to a koala that is so cute? And again, because these were larger than life toys, again, you looked at their eyes, and in the eyes of the children, you saw a bit of a fervor about playing with toys. They were overjoyed, the joy of the toys. When there's no movement, you could focus on the eyes more. And I don't know if it was, well, I do know they over-dilated the pupils. To show that, and I say, this is, again, there was a paper written on this that I read, how this was done intentionally to show fervor for toys. And possibly, this treaty said, to create a sympathetic vibration of the children. And I don't know if that was true, it did, and I said, well, is this going to affect the parents? And guests used to joke about it. They had this sense in this room. And if you looked, as this person did, with a high, they said, at each part of the ride, the pupils become more and more dilated. And the eyebrows and the angle of the eyebrows and the forehead and the shape of the mouth becomes more and more like the children are praising the toys in some way. So this was the first taste of that. It didn't sit right with you. The ride never felt comfortable inside of me. And I think if you had at least been introduced properly, but the fact that it was these strange, rusty things on the outside made you suspicious of what was happening. Like, had something happened, like the world that, you existed in, or that you were slowly becoming aware of outside of the park, I think you drew too many parallels. Then there was Movie Town and Dance Land and Musicville, which were all in the same room, and just kind of showed children passively consuming those things and getting joy from it, that movies and music and dance, I guess you don't passively enjoy dance, but there was, those dancing fuzzy friends. And then there was the final parts of the ride where you were going to be cast after Movie Land. They said, haven't you ever wished you would be the star of a movie, the hero or the heroine? And then it was the world of games. Now you truly can, with technology. And the founder, even back at, before there was video games, the founder knew they were coming, and you were digitized. Now none of these lighting effects were working, but you went through a tunnel that digitized you. and told you you were now part of the toys. You were in the world of toys, a central character in the game. And then there was a brief history of video games and giant pupils of children playing the initial games and the systems in all the way into the interactive past, a recent past or somewhat recent past. And kids playing them, but inside of them. But just strange juxtaposition for you because you didn't know, you know, that what is piloting a spaceship in a game was like, or flying as a heroine with superpowers was like. So again, you just found something off about those rooms, and that was the height of the ride. It was part of the, no, that was the ride, that part of the ride. I think it was changed, you know, and added on. I don't remember now. Maybe it was playing with, it used to be playing with your family land or play outside land. I can't remember anymore. But it built the fervor in the joy of being a part of the toys. And you kind of said, well, all these rides use your imagination. And one thing is the colors really held up because this was a newer part. They were very bright. And if the black lights had worked, you would have seen it was even wilder. But again, it just seemed like something, the children were under some hypnotic spell, I guess. I might as well say it. Under the influence of propaganda. I think that was Toy Town. Children, that was one of the reports on my attraction at Toy Town. Children under the influence of propaganda. Be careful what you wish for. I can't, you know, everyone had a fact-based opinion about, or a science-based opinion about me. But you seemed, as I watched you more, to be fixated on how not just that the children were enthralled with the toys, but that they weren't productive, that they didn't seem to do, they were totally immersed in Toy Town instead of having their day broken up into work and play and studying. There was no structure, and that they were oblivious to the beginning and the end of the ride, that they seem to be under some spell, which I guess makes sense when I look at it from your perspective, seeing the current condition, which for some reason you believed was part of the design of the ride. It could have been more like a dream, and that the children were just gleefully playing along. And I noticed you tried to sleep in the ride and you couldn't get any sleep. Eventually, you started covering the heads of all the children, especially the more dilated pupil ones. And then you got even more irritable, and you started taking out the toys that you could, ripping them from the children's hands, which when they were part of them. But when you set to do something, you do it. So you slowly remove, you just threw everything in the canal, which I thought was very interesting, since I'm a historian. I said, well, I hope historical preservationists don't find out about this. I don't think that exists anymore, but he ripped all the toys out. He threw them all, tin toys, wooden toys, digital toys. He threw it all in the canal. Even the ones you had to saw off, you got rid of. And then you got into the toy shop, and you threw a lot of those toys from the toy shop into the canal and just around the park. But then you came back. You weren't about to give up on, even though you covered the eyes of most of the children, or almost all of them, you came back to Doll Island and Action City, and you started to play next to the children. You play because you had already created your own families with different dolls and characters and people caring for Serena Swan. a global village around Serena Swan. You had your play where you acted out things, and I don't know if the ride reminded you that that was play, and maybe there was something there in your displeasure with those children having those things you did not have, a global village around them, while poor Serena Swan, you know, in some of your plays, she would just swim by herself, and you would talk to her and sing to her. But then you also showed the children, because I didn't understand there was no building or art. I guess when I contemplated my own existence, I said, why aren't there children drawing? Where there was wooden blocks in a corner, why aren't there children building with tin, or building with wood, or building with plastics? But you brought those toys in. You drew next to the children, and you would hum some of the songs you had heard in other parts of the park. You would play alongside. You would build things and show the other children. You would sometimes you would remove. You would see, but then you saw their eyes. You'd say, "No, that's too strange." Perfectly round head and eyes too wide. But you would sing to the children. You even started reading to them. And then an idea struck you. You know, you had encountered all the cats, the feral cats, as they were once called, now many generations past, that lived in one section of the park. And you had played with the cats. They were aware of your existence, and you seemed to have established a level of respect, and you would play hide and seek with some of the cats that were more curious about you. And slowly you started to use food to get the cats to slowly move into my. Now, this is where I would take exception, except the cats, even the cats in the park. They do have some respect for their territory, not like dogs. So you lured the cats in, and you actually drained the canal because you knew the cats didn't like water. And you closed the doors most of the way, so only you and the cats could get through. And slowly the cats moved in, a large portion of them, and they kind of liked it because the structure was not drafty, and it was very climate as controlled as could be in this time. You never, even though the environment was so hospitable, it never took to it because of the strangeness of the children and the juxtaposition of the beginning and the end of the ride. But the cats moved in, and you would go there and play with the cats. But what really got your attention in the end was the giant clock tower, 14 stories that rose above the ride. And at first it didn't really seem to interest you, but then you climbed it one day all the way to the top, where there was room. No guests were ever allowed there, but there was room up there for working on the clocks, and you could see out in all four directions all the way to the horizon, miles and miles away. And I realized this was probably the first time you'd seen outside of the park. And you would go up there for hours at a time. And you had seen the sun set in some sense, but you had never seen it set on a distant horizon. So you would watch the sunset, you would watch the sun rise. But you would look around, staring out at the horizon, looking for something. I think you were looking for that global village to be coming to you, or another village or something. But the times you checked, and then you realized after it's rained on you a few times that it wasn't exactly comfortable up there, unless the weather was, you know, middle, when it was too warm or too chill. So then in your brilliance, you realized there was already cameras up there, but they weren't working. And you found a way, and you strung together wire that you gathered from the park and ran it down to the solar power. And you got those cameras. That took a long time. I said, I don't even know if she knows what she's doing, but you seem to know. I don't know if they were symbolic or if you really got the camera, because you would still go out there every once in a while and just stare out at the horizon, waiting for something, holding Serena Swan and looking down at the world, at Toy Town, at the world of toys. You look down on me with disdain, but I guess I can understand it, but not like the guests. I guess there was a different disdain from the guests that said, well, this is right, it's just a, but, you know, the guests that sat back and enjoyed it and let their pupils dilate and let the song infect them, let their foot tap along with the tune I no longer even remember, that saw the bright colors and the constant motion, that suspended their disbelief and said, well, this is just a world of toys here. It's not a propaganda to get me to buy toys or to even use my imagination other than now. In the steady motion of the boats, in the song, and the planes on strings flying one way, and the ducks on strings waddling another way, the windmills are spinning, the kick of the children dancing, the clock faces turning, the tower bells ringing. It all made for something the guests could really enjoy as they slowly moved along in their boat at a languid pace, smiling and enthralled in an immersive attraction that was titillating them and so many, and then for the adults, hearkening back to when they were a child. And maybe, just maybe, I guess because there wasn't a part of you that could experience this, that maybe there was a world of toys out there, a toy town with places you could visit. Maybe it wasn't imaginary, that there was a possibility, and that drove some of the feeling in the ride, too. And a nice thing about it is you never really moved on from me. You'd come back and you'd check on the cats and you'd go up in the clock tower and check the sunset or the sunrise and look for, I don't know, smoke on the horizon, motion on the horizon, people on the horizon. And I guess there was no toys on your horizon. And sometimes you'd, you never, once the cats moved in, you didn't really sleep here, but I would be full of purring some nights, of sweet purring cats, and I would sleep to that. Good night. Hey, everybody, I want to thank everybody who reviewed the show over on Apple Podcasts. MUT Robot, for dogs and people. I have a 19-year-old dog that would only sleep if NCIS was on. Seriously. Yeah, but I didn't really want to watch NCIS, but I kept him sleeping. Yeah, someone on Twitter recommended this, so I gave it a shot. Works better than much better than NCIS and helps the dog sleep for 5 to 6 hours instead of 3 to 4. And he sometimes he stirs but doesn't get up. Also, it helps me sleep, too. I was deprived of sleep due to all that NCIS, and the dog also wants to listen during the day, and they started all the way back at the beginning. Holy cow, they're recommending it to everyone they know. Thank you so much. TV show lover says, surprisingly, works great. I found this podcast one night after not being able to fall asleep. I like the structure, have not made it to the story. Helps me fall asleep on days when I'm not tired. ENR88 from Canada says, puts me to sleep. Can't recall a subject I've listened to. And that's the point. Host rambles on, takes my mind off, works every time. Lulu Binks lives up to the hype. Love this podcast. Took two or three tries, but it really does work. Candy Kitten from Australia. That's my favorite kind of kitten. A cotton candy kitten. Can't live without this guy and his sleep-inducing voice. Stay sleepy and don't get overtired. That's a shout-out to my favorite Durfer podcast. Abby G-Y-G-G-H from the UK says, fantastic, soothing and perfect when your mind's racing. Works for me every time. Nottingham, England is grateful. Miss Maddie May says, this is great. Probably best podcast ever. Have always had trouble falling asleep. 90% of the time it works on the first try. Fell asleep before the story even started. 5 stars. Thanks for reading this. Yeah, this one came in. They don't like the podcast. So if you live in Australia, please review the podcast, because this is KJM says, do not describe, download, or listen. Thought it was a joke when it started playing. And I scrolled through to trying to see, look at the other reviews with the sandpaper voice, waiting for the meditation to start. The guy obviously hired a bulk download company with all the fake reviews. Feels this podcast, okay. Not very nice. But you know what is nice is this one from I. Sultiman from Ireland. Dear Scooter, boyfriend of my dreams, podcast sends me to sleep most nights. Scooter's gravelly voice, long-winded tangents are perfect for keeping me company. On the nights I can't sleep, I love how many episodes there are because I listen to more than one a night. Getting through 2016 and grateful to have more to come. And Dirt or Fancier says, better than Ambien, no side effects. I love it. And that's it. Thanks, everybody, for reviewing the show on Apple Podcasts. And if you want to review the show, especially if you're in Australia, because sometimes people, they think their opinion's the only one. But that's cool. Good night, and talk to you later. All right, everybody, this is Scoots. I'm talking about tonight's sponsor, Helix Sleep. You could take that Helix Sleep quiz at helixsleep.com/sleep. I'm just about to hit my 4-year anniversary sleeping in my Helix Dusk Lux. And I took that Helix quiz. You know, I sleep on my side. I sleep on my stomach. I toss. I turn. I don't want to overheat at night. And when I took the quiz, that was the mattress it matched me with, the Helix Dusk. I chose the Helix Dusk Lux because Helix has like 20 unique mattresses. They've got an award-winning Lux collection, the Helix Elite collection, which is new, a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, even a mattress made just for kids. And the way you'll know the Helix mattress works best for you and your body is to take that Helix sleep quiz at helixsleep.com/sleep. You'll find your perfect mattress in under 2 minutes. That personalized mattress will be shipped straight to your door free of charge. And Helix knows there's no better way to test out a new mattress than by sleeping it in your own home. That's why they offer a 100-night trial and a 10 to 15-year warranty to try out your new Helix mattress. Everybody's unique. Everybody sleeps differently. That's why Helix has several different mattress models to choose from, each designed for specific sleep positions and feel preferences. There's models with memory foam layers to provide optimal pressure relief if you sleep on your side, models with a more responsive foam to cradle your body for essential support in stomach and back sleeping positions. Plus, there's enhanced cooling features for people like me, keep us from overheating at night. If your spine needs that extra TLC, they got you. Every Helix mattress has a hybrid design combining comfort and support. I took the Helix sleep quiz. Like I said, I got matched with the Helix Dusk. I wanted something with the right firmness that I could sleep on my stomach, my side, even my back. And they kept me from overheating. And it fits the bill. And not only is it the best mattress I've slept on, the setup was fast and easy. Helix mattresses are delivered in a box straight to your door for free. Plus, all Helix mattresses come with a 10 to 15-year warranty, depending on the model. And if you don't want to take my word for it, Helix has been awarded the number one mattress pick by GQ and Wired magazine. It's even recommended by multiple leading chiropractors and doctors. The sleep medicine is a go-to solution for improving your sleep. And Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and two free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/sleep and use the code HELIXPARTNER20. That's HELIXPARTNER20, one word. This is the best offer yet, and it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now. Support for Sleep With Me comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting your time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/withme. That's odoo.com/withme. Odoo, modern management made simple.